White block capital letters fade up against the black background. Miramax Films presents a Renaissance Films production, an Ian Softly film, with Helena Bonham Carter, Linus Roach, Alison Elliott, Elizabeth McGovern, Michael Gambon, Alex Jennings, and Charlotte Rampling. Soft-focused spots of white light fade up against the credit titles and dance against the black background, suggesting night reflections off water. The Wings of the Dove, based on the novel by Henry James. Screenplay by Hossein Amini. From the left, two brighter soft-focused lights pass steadily across the screen. The other dancing lights fade away. The focus sharpens and the bright lights are seen to be the headlamps of a London underground train pulling into a station. It is 1910. On the platform, city gentlemen in suits, overcoats and hats, carrying briefcases and newspapers. On the wall, the station name, Dover Street. Below it, a young woman is seated on a bench. She wears an elegant dark blue overcoat with a long fur muffler wrapped round her throat. On her head, a broad flat-brimmed hat with blue and black tulle trim. Her pale lovely face with striking dark eyes is framed by dark hair. The city gentlemen board the train. She follows them. Music by Edward Shearmuir. Produced by Stephen Evans and David Parfitt. Directed by Ian Softly. The young lady stands in the crowded carriage clutching a hanging strap with one hand. She looks down the carriage towards a row of seated passengers. One of them, a young man in a light-coloured business suit and beige hat, glances up at her. Their eyes meet. He stands, doffing his hat and gestures towards his empty seat. The young woman moves down the carriage and sits, mouthing a thank you. The man is in his mid to late 20s, handsome, with light brown hair and alert, intelligent eyes. He stares down at her. She looks straight ahead, expressionless, watching the swaying movement of his suit jacket as it dances at her eye level. On an underground station platform, the young woman strides towards the exit amidst a crowd of other passengers. A few feet behind, the man follows after. As she leaves the platform, she glances quickly back at him, then moves on. Moments later, she is climbing a stairway. A few paces behind, the man still follows. She steps into the open doorway of an empty lift. The man follows her, pulling the open-meshed sliding door closed behind them. They stand side by side as the outer wooden doors close, and the lift slowly rises. Alone in the lift cubicle, they both look down, expressionless. Slowly, the man turns to her, removes his hat. He pulls her into his arms and kisses her, deeply, familiarly. Her arms and gloved hands encircle his neck, drawing him closer. His left hand caresses her back, moves down over the curve of her buttock, which he firmly grasps. He raises his hand towards her breast.
Kate.
But no.
In close-up, her brown eyes, a mascara brush daubs her lashes.
Where did you go all morning?
Seated at an elegant dressing table.
To the park.
The young woman, Kate, stares into the mirror.
All on your own?
I was supposed to meet a friend. She didn't turn up.
They are in dressing gowns. A maid looks on. The older lady glances into the mirror.
Too much powder. Close your eyes.
Lightly, she blows the excess powder from Kate's face. Then she stands, lifts an elegant jeweled necklace, and places it round Kate's neck. They stare into the mirror.
Try to look as if you've worn it all your life. It's yours.
The older lady leaves the bedroom with the maid. Kate ponders her reflected image, fingering the necklace. Later, a formal society party. The older lady with a gentleman in black evening dress. Across the room, Kate stands alone.
Do you remember my niece?
Kate? I didn't recognize her. You've quite transformed her.
Yes, I know. She's finally left her wretched father. I've been trying to arrange it since her mother died. She's my ward now. You'll just have to come and see us more often.
She doesn't look very happy.
She will be. This life is still new to her.
Does she know anyone here?
Just you for the time being.
Well, I shall have to go and say hello.
Smiling, he moves off. Kate, looking lovely in a blue, open-necked evening dress and wearing the necklace, stands at the top of a short flight of steps which overlooks the milling guests. The evening-suited gentleman joins her, holding a champagne glass. Kate smiles up at him.
How are you settling into your new life?
I'm very comfortable.
You look preoccupied.
I'm not used to all this.
Your aunt's something of an expert at these occasions.
How do you mean?
She has a wonderful eye for who fits best with who. She suggested I be your guide.
He glances across the room and nods.
Over there in that corner, we have Lady Baring and her daughter.
A plain young woman and her plump mother.
You see them?
Yes.
Now, what Lady Baring has to do is somehow maneuver her daughter from that side of the gathering to for the other without falling in the fountain. You see the man in the red waistcoat?
Yes.
He's the target.
Sure.
Why?
Because of his father's bank account. Barings have to pay for their castle somehow. As do we all.
You have a castle too, Lord Mark?
Well, it's seen better days. I spend more time in my London home. But you must let me entertain you in both. With your aunt.
Of course. He smiles.
Of course.
The Barings reach their target.
Whack.
He smokes.
Robin Hood couldn't have shot straighter.
A Fleet Street pub.
That's ridiculous. Look, the upper class isn't going to change of its own accord.
A group of young journalists. The speaker is the man from the underground train.
What I'm saying, they're only using reform to fool us, the supposedly radical players
behind this class conspiracy.
I'm not saying it's a conspiracy. They're just protecting themselves.
Hello?
Kate is standing beyond a windowed partition, smiling at them. The man from the train sees her.
Excuse me.
Hey, you can't just leave in the middle of an argument.
I just have.
He goes. Another journalist.
I thought she'd forgotten her old friends.
They look on as the young man joins Kate.
Didn't expect to see you here again.
They smile at one another affectionately. Kate leans back against the partition.
So how was the wedding?
Awful.
Didn't Aunt Maud find you a suitable husband?
She tried.
You thought any more about my offer?
I haven't thought about anything else since the day I met you.
The same thought for a whole year. It must be very tiring.
He steps back.
Why don't I just go straight to your Aunt Maud and ask for your hand in marriage?
Kate looks at him evenly.
All right.
What would she do?
She looks down. He steps close again.
Aren't I good enough for you?
You're not good enough for her.
Is that really necessary?
For the time being.
He nods.
To see what you can get out of her.
I never went to her. It was she who settled on me.
She looks up at him, half smiling. The rowing pond in Hyde Park. Boaters row for the dock as heavy rain begins to fall. In one of the boats, Kate and the young journalist, Merton Densher. Coatless, Kate welcomes the rain with face uplifted. Merton splashes her with water. As they dash towards a stone gazebo in the park, Merton grabs her round the waist from behind.
Please let me go!
I thought you liked the rain.
I'm drenched, Merton! Please let me go!
Long to be promised.
No!
She struggles. He holds her tight.
All right! I give up!
You know my conditions.
I'm not going to marry you.
Then we are going to get very wet together.
I promise.
Freed, Kate races for the gazebo. Merton follows. They stand close together.
So where's my ring?
Merton.
I need proof.
She stops his protests by throwing her arms around his neck and kissing him passionately, searchingly. His open arms slowly close around her and he returns the kiss. They stand in the gazebo with a curtain of rain falling beyond them, their mouths and bodies fused together. Later, the rain has stopped and the sun is shining. Kate, bedraggled and clutching her wide-brimmed blue hat, makes her way along the wet pavement towards the front door of the imposing cream-coloured Lancaster Gate house of her Aunt Maud. Inside, she passes up a wide marble staircase. Through a landing doorway, Aunt Maud is seen sitting on a sofa.
Kate, is that you?
Kate enters the room. Beside Maud on the sofa, Lord Mark, the gentleman from the party.
Lord Mark has been waiting all afternoon.
I'm sorry. You got caught in the rain. I didn't know you were coming, Lord Mark.
No, don't worry. It was an impromptu visit. I came to invite you both for lunch tomorrow.
I'm afraid I can't tomorrow.
Why not?
I've arranged to meet a friend.
One of your old friends?
Smiling, she rises and moves to a fruit bowl.
Can't you arrange to see her another day?
It's too late to cancel.
Taking a grape, Maud returns to the sofa.
I'll get my driver to send her a note.
Where does she live?
Maud sits again. Kate looks at them, tight-lipped.
I'm sure it'll be all right. I don't need to send a note.
Later, in the hall beside the great staircase, Kate holds the telephone.
Yes, hello. I was wondering if Mr. Merton Densher was in the office.
She glances up towards the noise above her.
Okay. Do you know when he'll be back? No, that's all right. Thank you. Goodbye.
Kate?
Glancing ruefully upwards, Kate ascends the stairs. Hyde Park. Merton, lying sprawled on a bench, checks his wristwatch. It is 3:15. He thinks for a moment, shading his eyes with his arms. Then he rises, puts on his hat, and strolls away. In his modest rooms near Fleet Street, Merton, in shirt sleeves and waistcoat and wearing glasses, is seated at a desk, writing by the light of an electric lamp. A cigarette is burning in an ashtray beside him.
It's open!
Kate enters in a short dark jacket and hat. Merton turns from his desk to look at her. Kate raises her eyebrows and closes the door.
You look surprised to see me.
Yes. Yes, I am.
He turns back to his work.
I'm sorry. I couldn't get away until now.
I have to finish this.
Don't pretend you can concentrate.
Well, I don't have any choice. I should have done this when I was waiting for you.
He turns to face her.
Where were you?
With Maud.
And what did she buy you this time?
Nothing.
Well, you should have come with me then, because I could have bought you nothing too.
He turns away again. Kate looks around the room.
It's much nicer here than I thought it would be.
Nice enough to move in.
Ooh, I'd have to see the rest of the house first.
She wanders off. Merton watches her. Opening a door, she passes into his bedroom. Merton rises and follows. He finds her lying on her side on the bed, resting her head on one hand, watching him. He looks down at her.
What if I didn't let you leave tonight? What would happen?
I'd be penniless, cast out of society, and I'd be stuck with you.
Good. Well, we'll open a bottle of something, and in the morning, everyone will know about us.
I'm not good at being impulsive.
Well, maybe if you just fell asleep and I didn't wake you up.
I won't fall asleep.
Merton's smile fades. Kate rises from the bed, stands next to him. Both are subdued, downcast.
One day you'll get tired of me.
I think it'll be the other way around.
No, it won't.
She places her hand on his chest in a caress, then moves off. Outside, they descend a stone stairway to the pavement. Merton raises an arm.
Cabby!
He holds the taxi door as she climbs in.
Hyde Park, please.
He closes the door and smiles in at her. She smiles back and the cab draws away. Hands in pockets, Merton strolls down Fleet Street after it, watching Kate's face looking back at him from the rear window. The departing taxi passes a horse-drawn wagon carrying huge rolls of blank newsprint. Kate's face in close-up, her lovely dark eyes stare back at Merton, thoughtful, troubled. She turns round to face the front, frowning slightly. Then she leans forward towards the driver.
Can we go to Old Street instead, please?
Kate walks alone down a shadowy working-class street. Nervously, she eyes the people she passes. A group of Chinese men watch her curiously. She moves by them. Entering a smoke-filled pub, the Five Dials, she stands by the door looking round at the clientele, working men in shirt sleeves and cloth caps with their wives and girlfriends. Her glance falls on a heavy-set bearded man with thin greying hair sitting at the bar with a tartly dressed young woman and smoking a cigarette in a holder. When he sees her, the man falls silent and he stares back at her. Moments later, he steps with her from the pub into the street.
So is this welcome home, then? Does your aunt know you're here?
She takes his arm as they stroll along.
That's why I've come to talk to you, Father. I want to leave her.
And go where?
Somewhere else.
With someone else? You're a journalist.
She smiles at him. In his shabby rooms.
You leave your aunt for him?
Yes.
With everything she can do for you?
I love him.
She is seated. He stands behind her.
How long do you think it would last without money?
I don't know.
Of course you do. What about your mother and me? How long did we last?
I love him.
You think I didn't love her? Well, how long? How long did we last before all the money ran out?
He moves to sit opposite her.
It took a month for me to begin stealing from her. It was living like this that killed her.
There are drink glasses on the table.
Do what Maud says.
He raises one of them and drinks.
You know, she's forbidden me to see you.
Then she's right. There's no limit to what your aunt can do for you.
Marry me to someone I don't love.
Marry you well.
Do you really think you'll see any of that money?
I already do. She sends me a few shillings each week. Her driver brings it round.
He glances at her, then looks down. Kate stares at him, indignant.
Then I'm part of your bargain.
How else do you think I survive? Don't look at me like that. We're the same, you and I.
Aunt Maud.
Yes, and I could have told you about the lawyers and others I had to pay to keep your father out of jail.
She's sitting on a sofa.
Did you tell me about the secret trysts in Hyde Park? A tiny room in Soho? A dirty pub in Fleet Street?
That has nothing to do with you!
Yes, it does.
Maud stands to confront her.
I won't let you make the same mistake as your mother.
Stern-faced, Maud reaches out to grasp Kate's chin with her hand.
If you see your friend ever again, I can't be responsible for you.
Rebellious, Kate pulls away. She starts off.
Or your father.
Kate turns to her, open-mouthed, incredulous. Shaking her head, she goes. In the street outside, Merton and the butler.
Then tell Miss Croy I'm not leaving until she comes down and sees me.
I've already told her.
Then tell her again, and again, and again, because I'm not leaving until I talk to her.
She doesn't want to see you.
Merton stares up at him, stunned. Slowly he backs away from the front door. From a window above, Kate looks down at him. When he glances in her direction, she turns aside. Putting on his hat, Merton walks dejectedly away down the broad pavement, past enormous stone-pillared house fronts. Beside him, hackneys and horse-drawn carriages trot past in brilliant sunlight. In her bedroom, Kate, barefoot, bare-armed, and wearing a thin blue house dress, lies curled on her bed, on her side, her eyes wide with grief. Her long dark hair, loose, lies splayed over the pillow behind her. Absently, she chews a thumbnail. Night, 3 months later. Elegant, evening-dressed guests are seated around Maud's long dining table. At the head, a dark-haired lady chats to Maud.
It took exactly a week. We left New York on the 14th and we arrived in London yesterday. I'm so glad we're here. Millie looks completely transformed.
They glance down the table towards a lovely young woman.
We were originally going to go straight to Venice, but I told Millie I can't come to Europe without visiting you.
Well, you'll just have to persuade her to stay a little longer.
She takes all the decisions. I'm just the companion.
Down the table, Millie smiles at her warmly. Lord Mark is beside Kate.
Not very talkative.
You haven't given me a chance.
She wears a black evening dress.
Black suits you perfectly tonight.
Kate looks at him, piqued. Then she looks down the table towards Millie, who smiles back at her.
Has anyone ever told you not to stare?
Kate looks down at her plate.
Do you know her well?
I wish I knew her better.
Why is everyone so fascinated by her?
She'd be the Queen of America if they had one. The world's richest orphan. She's worth millions.
Then why aren't you sitting next to her?
Well, your Aunt Maud wouldn't let me.
He smiles at Kate and sips his wine. Kate looks again at Millie, seated between two young gentlemen admirers. Catching Kate's eye, Millie smiles again with obvious interest. After dinner, the guests stand in small groups or lounge in chairs in the large drawing room, chatting and smoking. Kate, holding a brandy snifter, saunters idly among them. When she stops at a table to put down her glass, Millie comes up beside her.
I finally got you on your own.
Kate turns to her, smiling.
Lord Mark's been monopolizing you all evening. Yes, but he's been staring at you the whole time. So have I.
Nearby, Lord Mark chats with Maud.
I think your aunt's a little drunk.
No, she's never drunk. It would interfere.
With what?
All the plots she's hatching.
They sit down.
You make her sound like a witch. Oh, no. She can't fly. Yet.
Kate raises a cigarette and smokes as Millie sips from her brandy snifter. Day. In bright sunlight, Kate, with the sleeves of her blouse rolled up, kneels before a brown marble stone in a cemetery, scrubbing it with a bristle brush. The inscription of the stone reads, "In loving memory of Mary Croy, 1866 to 1908, rest in peace." Now she rinses her hands with water from a tall pewter jug. On the top deck of a horse-drawn omnibus, Kate, in a dark coat and hat, sits looking down at the pavement. In the doorway of a great white-fronted building, a young woman wearing a broad hat appears. Kate's eyes widen.
Billy?
The young woman does not hear. The omnibus passes by. When it stops a few yards beyond, Kate descends, and crossing the busy roadway, makes for the white building front. Somewhere ahead of her, Millie is tucking some papers into a handbag. Pulling up before the white building, Kate reads the brass plaque at the side of the doorway. Sir Luke Strett, MB, MRCS, Consultant Radiologist. Frowning, Kate glances back towards Millie, who turns a corner into a side lane. Kate follows after. When she reaches the lane, Millie has disappeared. Kate pauses before a bookshop with racks of second-hand books displayed before it. She goes inside. Millie stands near a bookcase, perusing a small book.
Psst.
She hides the book.
Kate, I saw you from the bus. I thought you were running away from me. No, not at all. I didn't see you.
Kate moves closer.
What are you reading? Tennyson. Ah, who are you visiting? Just now. Some friends.
Kate glances around. The customers are all men. She frowns and moves away, stopping to call back to her friend through a gap between books on a shelf.
Millie
joins her. Kate to one of the gentlemen browsers.
Excuse me, is this a foreign language section?
Embarrassed, the man and several others put down what they've been reading and move away. Kate picks up a book and opens it.
Let's see.
Inside, a full-page etching of a naked group performing sexual gymnastics. Later, Lord Mark and the two girls at Aunt Maud's.
Well, if I'd have been the owner, I'd have thrown you both out.
Why?
Because that part of the bookshop is reserved for men.
Why?
You saw the pictures.
Exactly, I saw them. Have I changed? Have I suddenly become corrupt?
Mm. It's a gradual process. Look at Kate.
There's nothing corrupt about Kate.
Mm. Of course there is.
Kate shakes her head.
It's in her eyes. Can't you see? There's far too much going on behind those pretty lashes.
Millie leans towards him.
I think we're going to leave you until you've sobered up.
Leaving Lord Mark on the sofa, they saunter away among the guests.
He must be in love with you to behave like that.
God, I hope not.
They move out of the room just as Merton Densher appears at the front door, escorting a well-dressed lady some years older than he is. Leaning on an upstairs railing, Millie looks down at the two new arrivals with interest. She smiles as Lord Mark moves to greet them.
Mr. Merton
Densher, sir. How do you do, Mr. Densher?
Lord Mark leads them away through the milling guests. Millie continues to stare at them. Kate approaches her from behind. She has not yet seen Merton. She playfully tickles Millie's waist, smiling. Millie smiles back, then turns her attention to the guests below.
Do you know who he is?
Kate glances down. Her smile fades as she recognizes Merton.
Yes. He's a friend of the family.
Kate smiles at Millie and withdraws from the rail. Millie follows her. Downstairs, Lord Mark has left Merton and his older companion alone. The lady smiles up at Merton, who bends to kiss her on the lips. The lady looks surprised. Merton turns to see Kate watching from across the room, expressionless. She turns and moves off up a stairway. Merton leaves the lady and follows Kate upstairs. On the landing above, Kate turns to see him, then disappears up the stairs. Merton continues after her. On the first floor, he opens a door. It is a billiard room, empty except for Kate. She's leaning against the side of the table, her arms crossed, looking down. Merton moves to the same side of the billiard table and also leans against it at the other end. They both look down.
Where did you find your friend?
Merton looks at her.
She was invited. I wasn't. It was one way to get to see you.
Did you get my letters?
Yes.
Why didn't you write?
I didn't see the point.
So why have you come now?
Merton stares at her, his face a blank. Kate stands with folded arms.
Did it hurt?
Is that what you wanted?
Merton glares. Slowly, Kate moves closer to him. He watches her warily.
I hurt so much. You can't imagine.
It was your choice.
You just have to wait.
Merton's eyes soften. He reaches out a hand, caresses Kate's cheek. She settles her face against his hand, kisses it, looks up at him. Then she throws her arms around his neck, kissing him passionately, searchingly. Suddenly she pulls back with a teasing smile.
I want you to go back and kiss her with that mouth. You came with her.
Smiling, Kate pulls away and starts off.
I'll come and see you soon.
She goes, leaving him staring at the floor. The next day, Kate and Millie in a taxi.
Poor Mark. He invited you to his country house. He invited you too, only to keep you company.
It's not my type.
No?
What is your type?
That friend of yours at the party.
She smiles at Kate, who looks puzzled.
Which friend?
The one who came in with the older woman.
Slightly open-mouthed, Kate peers at her.
Merton Densher.
He was beautiful.
Millie turns away, beaming. Kate watches her. In Merton's newspaper office.
What's your article about?
Hospitals.
What do you care about hospitals?
Oh, I care about a lot of things that you don't know.
For example?
Merton glances at his article.
For example, there's a doctor at King's who runs a little surgery on the side for whores. He charges £1, 1 shilling for issuing virginity certificates and £2 for sewing the ladies up. He operates on 12-year-old girls and sends them back out on the streets to earn the money to pay him. And he's just been elected to the Royal Society. For example.
Kate reads the pages over his shoulder.
Are you censoring it?
She smiles.
I'm editing it for you.
Taking the pages from him, she walks away, reading.
It's very angry.
Well, it's supposed to be.
So angry you've left out a word.
She gives him the pages. Now she follows him through the office.
Have you heard of Sir Luke Strett?
Of course I have.
Why, of course?
He's a leading blood specialist, a very respected doctor. Why?
He's a friend of Millie's.
Who's Millie?
Oh, my best friend of a day.
Oh, yes, the American girl.
How did you know she was American?
By her laugh.
Oh, you're such a snob. She liked you.
That's because she doesn't know me.
You're not nearly as bad as you'd like to be.
He turns, raising his hands like claws. Kate smiles. In the radiology room at Sir Luke Strett's surgery, Millie lies on a bed surrounded by electronic equipment. A blue arc flutters between two electric terminals. At the side, Sir Luke Strett in a white laboratory coat.
Everything's going to be fine.
The bearded Sir Luke smiles down at her, reassuringly. Hands adjust electric dials. Needles move over the faces of meters. Millie, in her underclothes and covered by a sheet, looks about apprehensively at the wires and glass radio tubes surrounding her. In a park, a group of young boys play football under a sky dark with clouds. Millie, in a broad-brimmed hat and elegant embroidered overcoat, watches them smiling from beside a bench. As the shirt-sleeved lads scramble for the ball, Millie raises her hands to applaud them.
Oh, wonderful!
The boys turn to look at her, then dash off as rain begins to fall heavily. Millie is left alone in the gloomy afternoon. Gathering her coat closely about her, she makes for a building at the edge of the park, towards which other people are running to escape the rain. It is a gallery. She goes inside. Moments later, she stands looking up at a copy of the painting The Kiss by Gustav Klimt. In the painting, a young dark-haired man passionately kisses the cheek of his lover, whose eyes are closed with rapture. Millie stares at the painting thoughtfully. Other people wander from painting to painting at her side. Unseen by her, Kate passes by an archway at the end of the room. Millie turns in time to see Merton Densher cross the archway. Interested, she steps through the archway and finds him staring intently at a painting. She's about to speak when...
Millie?
She turns.
Kate!
Kate approaches. They shake hands.
I'm here with Merton. You haven't met Merton properly before, have you?
No. Hello.
Hello.
They smile at one another.
I want to show you something.
Taking her arm, Kate leads Millie into another room. Merton follows, holding his hat. Kate stops before another Klimt, a full-bodied female nude curled up on her side. Voluptuous, sensual. Millie smiles at Kate. With a mischievous smile, Kate moves away, leaving Merton and Millie alone before the painting.
Kate's been talking about you all afternoon. I was almost sure we'd bump into you.
It's funny how that happens, isn't it? I hope she was saying nice things about me.
Oh, yes. Very nice things. You've made quite an impression.
Well, so is she. What are you doing here, the two of you?
Looking at paintings.
Of course. I was hiding from the rain.
They join Kate. Merton checks his watch.
Well, I'm sorry to have to leave you, but if I don't go, I'll be late for work. It was a pleasure to meet you. Goodbye.
With the last smile for Kate, Merton walks away. The two young ladies stroll on together through the gallery.
Well, I hope I didn't scare him away.
Oh, no.
Kate glances over her shoulder at the departing Merton.
It's not what you're thinking. No? Nope.
They stand looking up at a painting.
He's an old family friend.
Kate turns to Millie with a half smile and moves off. Millie contemplates the painting, her face brightening with a dreamy smile. Morning, Lord Mark's country home. Lord Mark, in a dressing gown, stands on the crenellated parapet wall of his house, firing a shotgun down into the landscape garden. Waking, Kate steps from her bed in pajamas and peers upward from her window.
Oh, damn!
Lord Mark is shooting at a rabbit that scurries along the garden below. He misses it. Lifting a silver flask, he drinks deeply from it, wiping his mouth with his hand. He takes aim again. Above him on a tower, Millie and Kate appear. Breaking the shotgun to reload, he turns to them.
Look at my view, Millie. Isn't it wonderful?
Shocked, the young ladies in dressing gowns watch as he takes aim again. Millie winces at the noise. They look horrified. Later in Lord Mark's sitting room.
What's your secret, Millie?
He paces before a lit fireplace. Millie lounges on a sofa.
Secret?
She sips from a wine glass. Kate is seated nearby.
My theory is you can't really live, can't truly live, until you trust someone with your secret.
It's a good theory.
Yes, it is.
Millie half smiles. Holding her glance, Lord Mark raises a brandy snifter and drinks. Later, a black-suited servant extinguishes the candles in the room and goes, leaving Lord Mark alone, standing before the flickering fireplace. He lifts his brandy glass and drains it, then turns and walks drunkenly off, putting the glass down on a table as he passes. Upstairs, he opens a doorway stealthily and steps into a darkened bedroom. Closing the door behind him, he carefully crosses the room and sits on the edge of the bed. Reaching out his hand, he gently caresses the heavy brocaded bedspread. Cautiously, tenderly, his hand explores the contours of the legs and thighs of the person lying beneath it. As his hand moves higher, the person awakes. It is Kate.
Shh, I just want to talk to you. I want to explain.
Mark, you have to go.
I need her. That's why that's why I pay her all the attention. That's why I ignore you.
You don't ignore me. Mark, you're drunk.
I love you, Kate. You.
He clutches her hand. Kate shifts uncomfortably.
I need Millie's money to keep my home. I have to marry her. It doesn't have to be forever.
What are you talking about?
She's ill. She's very ill. Everyone in New York knows about it. All my friends there. And when she's gone...
Get out. Get out right now, or I'll tell her everything you've said. Every word. I swear, Mark.
He stares at her open-mouthed.
Right.
He stands, weaving slightly.
I just wanted to say how sorry I am for ignoring you today.
He shuffles off, leaving Kate frowning with shock, on the edge of tears. Millie's bedroom. Millie lies sleeping peacefully on her side on the bed, one hand close to her mouth. A candle burns in a holder on the bedside table. The rest of the room is in dark shadow. Kate, in her blue pajamas, approaches the bed and looks down at Millie, her mouth open in concentration. Suddenly, Millie stirs and sits up.
Shh, it's me.
Sleepily, Millie looks across at her.
Are you all right?
Kate nods, still open-mouthed.
It's freezing in my room. Sleep here.
Millie, in a white silk nightdress with spaghetti straps, moves over and pulls back the covers. Numbly, Kate crawls in beside her, lying on her side and facing away from Millie. Millie moves close, puts her arm round Kate. Kate's face is deeply troubled.
What's wrong?
Kate's eyes blink back tears.
What?
Kate reaches back to take Millie's hand in hers.
Nothing. These wretched aristocrats can't even heat their houses.
Satisfied, Millie snuggles down beside her and closes her eyes. Kate's eyes are still open, full of pain. They still hold each other's hands. Day. Merton Densher, in beige tweeds and pants, crosses a busy street and enters a smart hotel restaurant. The doorman gives a hat and coat to an elderly man.
Good day.
Who then leaves with his wife. Merton holds the door for them, then gives the doorman his hat.
Merton!
Across the restaurant, Millie and her companion, Susan, at a table. Smiling, Merton joins them. Millie rises.
Hello.
Hello. This is my friend Susan.
How do you do? Kate told me she was meeting you here.
No, she was busy today.
Merton looks surprised.
I must have got the wrong day.
Well, she's getting ready for Venice.
He looks at her blankly.
Venice?
Yes, she's coming with Susie and me to Venice. Susie's got to convince Aunt Maud first.
I said I'll try.
Today. Will you sit with us?
Thank you, but I really must get back to work. Goodbye.
Shall I walk you out?
Smiling, Merton assents. Millie rises and together they make their way through the tables towards the front door.
Kate hadn't told you we were going to Venice.
Well, I hadn't seen her.
Are you and Kate old friends?
Is that what she told you?
Yes.
The doorman gives him his hat.
Why don't you come with us?
He stops, turns to her.
To Venice?
She smiles.
Why not?
That's something only a princess would say.
And you look down on princesses.
She looks at him challengingly.
Especially princesses.
He smiles at her warmly and takes her hand.
Goodbye.
Millie stands looking after him wistfully. At the top of the stairwell outside Merton's flat, Kate sits waiting in a smart blue dress and a black hat. When Merton enters from the street below, she trips down the stairs to meet him. Merton, ascending, looks up the stairwell to see her. She smiles and waves to him coyly.
Where were you?
Here.
So why was I there?
She shrugs her shoulders.
Couldn't get away.
Merton makes to pass her, but she stops him.
Do you hate me a little more for standing you up?
You didn't just stand me up. You set me up.
He tries again and she blocks him.
Did you like her?
No.
Did she like you?
Well, she asked me to come to Venice.
Why don't you?
Why should I?
Because I'll be there and Maud won't.
What about poor old Millie?
Why poor old Millie?
Well, she wants to be with you on her own.
Sure, she'd rather be with you on her own.
Look, I'm not going to Venice.
He passes her.
You want to see me? You see me here?
Don't you think she's beautiful?
No.
I won't get jealous.
No, I don't think she's beautiful.
I do. I think she's the most beautiful woman I've ever met.
Then I'm sure you'll have a good time together in Venice.
He smiles tightly down at her and goes. Later in Kate's bedroom.
Susie will be there to look after us.
Susie's a glorified maid. The two of you will do as you like.
Maud moves to sit on the bed where Kate lies under the covers with a book. A lamp burns beside her.
I had plans for you this summer.
I'm sorry.
And if I say no?
I'll still go.
No matter what the consequences.
I'll have to ask Millie for help.
It didn't take you long to find a new patron.
She's a friend.
Call it what you will. They're still for hire.
She opens a jewel case and withdraws an obviously expensive necklace, which she holds up.
When will you be back?
Well, that's entirely up to her, isn't it?
Expressionless, Maud looks from the necklace to Kate.
You'll need something nice to wear around, Millie. People might think you're her servant.
Leaving the necklace on the bed, Maud rises and starts out. By the door, she turns back. For a long moment, the two women stare at one another. Then Maud goes. An underground train. Kate sits alone wearing a fur-trimmed blue overcoat and a black hat with blue feather trim. She holds a small, soft leather drawstring pouch in her leather-gloved hands. She slips the pouch into a purse and snaps it shut. Her face is tight, determined. At a street door.
Yes, I have something for Mr. Croy.
A Chinese woman stands in the doorway.
Look, I know he's here. Please give him this.
Kate hands the leather pouch to the po-faced woman and sets off down the street, casting a look back as she goes. The woman goes inside. In the house, men sit or lie on bunk beds in shadowy, candlelit rooms, sleeping off the effects of opium. A group play mahjong at a table. A man in shirt sleeves and waistcoat lights an opium pipe at a candle flame. The woman moves further into the house. In an alcove, Kate's father lies on his side on a bed, dozing and clutching an opium pipe. Seated beside him, the tartly dressed young girl from the pub. The Chinese woman places the bag on a table near him and withdraws. Blearily, Mr. Croy reaches out to open the bag, shaking out its contents. It is the necklace. Grasping it in one hand, he clutches it to his chest and dozes again. The scene fades. Against blackness, sparkling spots of light dance over the screen in soft focus, as during the titles. The focus sharpens, and the lights are seen to be the flickering reflections of gondola lanterns on the waters of the Grand Canal in Venice. Two gondolas pass the torchlit entrance of an elegant Venetian palazzo. The gondoliers. Inside the palazzo, Kate and Millie follow a tail-coated footman along a torch and candle-lit brick-walled corridor. He leads them up a stone stairway past plain stone pillars. Candles burn in sconces and in hanging glass lanterns.
Hi, hi!
The footman chivies a couple of servants. In a dark suite, the footman lights a lamp. As the light brightens, Millie turns to him.
Oh, wait, Eugenio. Let's eat in the dark.
Millie leads Kate into the room beyond, a vast, high-ceilinged hall lit only by exterior light from tall, leaded windows which look out over the canal. The blue light is reflected by the polished floors.
Is this all yours?
It's ours.
Millie follows Kate towards the windows. Later, the two girls stand together at the stone balcony rail outside the windows, looking down over the torchlit canal.
Thank you for bringing me here.
Thank you for coming. If you ever get bored, you can invite anyone you want.
Why should I get bored?
If you do.
Millie leans on the rail.
Who would you like me to invite?
Whoever you like.
Shall I ask Merton?
Slowly, Millie smiles.
I already have. He said no.
Do you want me to ask him?
Only if you want to.
Only if you want to.
He's your friend. I hardly know him.
All right, then. We won't ask him.
Millie smiles. Later, Kate lies in bed, listening to the sounds from Millie's room. Kate lies in the darkness, wide-eyed and troubled. In the corridor outside, Susan, Millie's companion, in her dressing gown and with her long hair in a plait over one shoulder, passes Kate's room carrying a lamp and a bowl of medication. As she goes, Kate appears in her nightdress at the door, watching her. Kate stands a moment listening to Millie, then closes the door. At a desk in her bedroom, wearing a silk wrapper over her nightdress, she folds a letter and places it in an envelope. She licks the flap and seals it shut. Picking up a pen, she writes an address on it. Merton, in shirt sleeves and wearing his round reading glasses, sits in his rooms in London reading the letter. At length, he finishes and looks up thoughtfully.
Merton, what made you change your mind?
Oh, I was always going to come.
No, really?
It just took a little time to scrape the money together.
A narrow alleyway.
This place was recommended by a friend.
Well, I thought he was a friend. I arrived here.
A homely little hotel.
Well, here it is. Buongiorno. Note the splendid stucco work, the elegant stone motifs. This stupendous building is a classic example of early Venetian Baroque and was used as a model for many of the great European palaces. Like to follow me in an orderly line.
They pass a man on the stairs. The plain bathroom.
This way, ladies. Here we have the legendary baths of the Palazzo Dencia.
Oh, surely this was modeled after the great Byzantine steam house in Constantinople.
Yes, but many would argue that that miraculous monument pales against the splendor of this later masterpiece.
How much are you paying for this, Merton?
On the broad steps of a magnificent church beside the canal, Merton, Millie and Kate sit in bright sunlight. Beside them on a cloth, a bottle of wine, some bread and fruit. Millie, in a long yellow dress, rises with a box camera. Kate moves close to Merton for the photograph. Evening. Merton and the girls haggle with gondoliers.
Three.
Due gondoli.
Say two boats.
Due gondoli.
But there's plenty of room. We can all get on.
Siamo tre insieme. There's no point trying to speak Italian, Merton. I'll take this one, and you and Millie take the other one.
In waning golden light, the two gondolas set out onto the canal, passing elegant white palazzos with arcaded first stories. As they progress, the light fades further. The gondola lanterns are lit. They leave the broad canal and pass into a narrow side canal only a few meters wide. In the darkness, the lantern lights flicker over the white stone of the buildings and balconies. Kate's gondolier offers a running commentary.
This way up.
sono brillanti come la luna. E il colore della sua pelle.
Lounging on cushions beside Merton, Millie beams with happiness. From the leading gondola, Kate calls back to her.
Diego's flirting with me. What's your Italian like, Millie?
Millie glances behind.
I can't see him in the dark.
Millie rolls her eyes at Merton.
How's Merton? Merton, say something.
You're drunk, aren't you?
Oh, that's not such a bad idea. Millie, tell him I promised to be quiet. She promises to be quiet.
Tell her it's too late.
It's too late. Why?
The boats are abreast of one another.
Millie. Millie. Come closer. Come closer.
They reach out to catch and kiss one another's hands playfully. Day. The Piazza San Marco. Merton, Kate, Millie and Susan enter the great basilica and stroll forward over an ornately patterned tile floor, gazing in wonder at the rich decoration of the walls and ceiling. From great leaded windows, sunlight spills onto the floor in soft, angular wedges. They look up, enjoying the intricacy of the geometric design of the ceiling domes. As they move forward, Millie notices a shadowy doorway at the side with a winding stair.
Kate. Oh, I think I'll wait outside, Millie. I don't like heights. Susie?
It's a long way up, Millie. Are you sure?
Merton, will you come?
I'm not good with heights either.
Nodding, Millie turns and ascends the stairway. Merton and Kate move on. Susan stands looking after Millie for a moment, then sets off up the stairs after her. Kate and Merton stroll in the piazza outside.
You should have gone with her.
Why?
Because she asked you to. It's rude to say no.
Why do you want me to be with her all the time?
It isn't all the time.
Well, last night, for example.
I don't want her to feel left out.
She doesn't care.
Of course she does.
They stop on the stone paving. Kate draws near to him.
She's in love with you.
She hardly knows me.
That doesn't matter. It's the way she is.
On the upper balcony of the basilica, Millie, slightly breathless, looks down on the people strolling in the piazza below as pigeons flutter around her. She smiles happily. For a moment, her smile fades and a look of anxiety crosses her face. Then she smiles again. Below, two nuns in white habits stroll past, then a man and a woman, then two ladies together. Millie produces a handkerchief and dabs at her throat and forehead. Susan approaches from the side, watching her attentively, fondly. When Millie senses her there and turns, they smile at one another. Millie turns away again and, closing her eyes, raises her face, drinking in the moment. The Campo della Beccaria, the fish market. Stallholders tend wicker baskets of fresh fish on long trestle tables under sail-like awnings as a crowd of customers wanders among them. In the midst of it, Millie and Kate. Millie, her hair loose, fans herself with a painted silk fan. As she moves from stall to stall, Millie seems sickened by the piles of dead fish and the rising stench, made worse by the heat of the day. She turns away from the tables, fighting down a wave of nausea. From the side, Kate looks on, concerned by her friend's obvious discomfort. In a gondola on a narrow canal near the market, Kate, Millie, Susan and Merton sit together. Millie appears to be still unwell. The others watch as she fidgets with her shawl.
Are you all right?
It's just so hot. Isn't it hot?
It's not that hot.
Just close.
Do you feel dizzy?
Leaning forward, Millie scoops water from the canal and dabs it on her cheeks and throat. Then she turns back to them, smiling nervously.
That's better.
In the crowded canal, another gondola bumps into theirs. Millie is thrown off balance. Merton puts his arm around her to steady her. Millie smiles up at him weakly with gratitude. In the great marble foyer of a hospital, Kate and Merton stand waiting. Susan approaches from a stairway, smiling.
There's nothing to worry about. It was just a dizzy spell.
Kate grins with relief.
Can we see her?
She's asleep. We'll see you later.
Good.
Putting on his hat, Merton takes his leave. Kate follows him. In a busy canalside cafe, Kate and Merton sit at a table over a simple lunch. A gondola passes close by.
You heard what Susan said.
Susan was lying.
Why should she lie?
Millie's dying.
Merton stares at her with disbelief, unmoving.
She can't be. She looks fine.
Kate looks down. She holds a cigarette in a holder.
How do you know?
Lord Mark told me.
Why didn't she say anything?
She didn't want us to know.
It doesn't make sense.
It makes perfect sense. He's come here to live, not to die. She doesn't want our pity.
What does she want?
Kate raises her eyes to his.
Your love.
Merton leans forward over the table.
How long have you known she was ill?
Kate looks away, then back at him.
I wasn't sure until today.
But you knew before?
Yes.
That's why you wanted me to come to Venice.
He stares deep into her eyes.
For her?
Kate looks away, nodding slightly, then back to him.
For her. And for us.
She looks out over the canal. Merton looks puzzled.
For us?
Kate looks at him again, intently.
We're all she has.
Tight-lipped and half-frowning, Merton stares at her. Slowly, he settles back onto his chair. Later, in Millie's bedroom, Kate sits at a dressing table wearing a low-necked, sleeveless underslip. Millie stands behind her in a loose dressing gown, plaiting Kate's hair in a long braid, which she then wraps with a ribbon. Both are subdued, pensive. Now Millie sits in the chair as Kate, kneeling beside her, applies lip rouge to Millie's opened mouth. As Kate works, they stare into one another's eyes. Dabbing at Millie's lips to blend the rouge, Kate smiles. Millie smiles back. Evening. On the Grand Canal, a fleet of dark gondolas with lit lanterns move slowly along the quayside in fading amber light, clustered close together. Inside them, black figures in capes and tricorn hats, wearing white skeletal half-masks, staring forward, eerily immobile. Now, in full darkness and under the flickering light of flaming torches, Kate and Millie, Susan and Merton, all in fancy dress, step from a gondola onto the stone steps of a quay. Millie carries a half-mask on a stick, which she holds to her face.
This is so exciting! I can't believe we're here.
Millie, in a long white lace dress with a white lace mantilla draped over her head, takes Kate's arm.
We go over the bridge!
They climb the quayside stairs up to the paved walk. Kate wears a matador's costume with a flat Cordoban hat. Merton, also dressed in a Spanish costume and wearing a Cordoban hat, follows with Susan, who wears a long black lace dress and a mantilla. Together, they cross an arched white stone bridge into a square surrounded by elegant Venetian buildings, their windows and arched colonnades brilliantly lit from within. A throng of masked people in 18th century fancy dress, some wearing powdered wigs, talk together animatedly in clusters beneath lit street lamps and blazing torches. Arm in arm, Kate and Millie pass into a narrow side street with Merton and Susan following after. They're swept along by the stream of revelers into another broad square where the crowd is even more dense. Here and there on raised platforms, joints of meat are roasting on spits over open fires. Torches flicker in all directions, casting an amber glow over the festivities. Gypsy musicians play on a raised platform. Before them, gypsy men in loose shirts, sashes and neck scarves dance with their partners to the music. The gypsy women wear loose blouses with low elasticated necklines and long full skirts. On the floor of the square, the costumed revelers join hands and dance along with them. Clapping her hands to the music, Millie moves towards them. She turns back to the others.
Merton, dance with me.
Merton follows Millie towards the dancers. His wide-brimmed hat hangs down his back on a ribbon. Millie turns to him.
You don't look yourself today.
Really? How do I look?
You look wounded. Your eyes are big and sad.
He smiles at her, opening his arms to invite her to dance. They sweep along with the others, turning to the music. From the side, Kate stands watching expressionless. Her flat hat is perched jauntily on one side of her head. As they dance, Merton looks back at Kate and smiles. Kate returns the smile wistfully. Millie notices this.
Would you rather be dancing with her?
With Kate?
Unless you've got a soft spot for Susan, too.
I'm perfectly happy dancing with you.
You're a beautiful liar.
Holding hands with others, they're swept along in the snake-like dance. Millie beams with happiness. As the music picks up tempo, they whirl faster and faster until, breaking away, they stand close together. Impulsively, Millie leans forward to kiss Merton lightly on the mouth. He looks at her without expression. At the side, Kate's face darkens as she watches them. She glances away, then back at them, half frowning. Merton looks briefly in her direction, then clasps Millie and draws her into the dance again. The revelers join hands and twine around in an ever-tightening circle of moving bodies. Wide-eyed and tight-lipped, Kate stares at Merton and Millie, dancing together so happily. Later, in another square, the four friends walk quietly through clusters of masked and costumed revelers. Millie has taken Merton's arm. Kate walks before them, subdued. Susan follows after. In the center of the square, a large marble fountain. A few revelers wade in it, cooling themselves.
Well, that looks good. Will you wait for me?
Leaving Merton, Millie moves to the fountain, sits on its edge, and begins to wet her cheeks and neck with the cool water. Kate stands with Merton. As a crowd of revelers passes, she grabs his arm and pulls him into the midst of the moving mass. On her face, a determined smile. Merton frowns.
We'll lose them.
Good.
They're swept away. At the fountain, Millie and Susan stand peering into the crowd.
Where did they go?
Breaking out of the revelers, Kate pulls Merton down a side street. Some way behind, Millie and Susan move along a narrow lane looking for them. Kate runs down a shadowy, deserted alley with Merton close behind. She turns a corner and stops. When Merton arrives, she pulls him into her arms, kissing him passionately. In a brightly lit square nearby, Millie searches for them. Frustrated, she turns to Susan.
They're probably waiting for us back at the fountain.
Susan smiles and nods. Millie goes. Susan looks around once more thoughtfully and follows after her. In the dark alley, Merton still embraces Kate.
I thought I lost you tonight.
No.
He presses her against an ornately patterned wrought iron gate and kisses her again, hungrily. Then he holds her tightly, his face buried in her neck. She rests her chin on his shoulder.
It's the first time I didn't feel sorry for her. She was so happy dancing with you.
They kiss again.
I'm going to leave you alone with her.
Merton stiffens. He raises his eyes, looking over her shoulder, serious.
What are you talking about?
What we were talking about before.
Merton pulls away and glares down at her.
Don't look at me like that. You thought the same things.
He stares at her without expression. Turning, he walks a few paces away, massaging the back of his neck with one hand. Then he turns back to her, nodding and half smiling.
You want me to seduce a dying girl?
Kate looks away.
And you really think she'll just leave me all her money?
Yes.
Why?
Because I know her. I know how she loves.
And how do you love?
He stares at her challengingly.
Show me how you love.
I don't understand.
If you don't understand me, then I don't understand you.
She looks up at him. When he bends as if to kiss her, she slides away to one side. Looking back at him, she moves off. He watches her go, then follows. In the square, Millie sits leaning against the marble fountain, clasping her knees, her head resting on the fountain edge. Susan kneels beside her.
You won't find them, darling. They'll come back here.
Her face is sad. Susan looks at her with compassion. In a dark alcove beside a canal, Merton embraces Kate against a wall. His shirt tail is hanging loose. Her bare ankle is hooked round his leg. They make love. Beside them in the shadows, empty gondolas bob on the black water. Dawn. In her bedroom at the Palazzo Leporelli, Millie lies awake in her bed, staring down at her hands on the bedspread. She turns her head towards the door, listening.
Kate?
When there is no reply, she looks down again. After a moment, Kate appears in the doorway, jacketless, in a white shirt, and with her tie hanging loose around her collar. She looks across at Millie, who glances up at her.
I looked for you everywhere.
Millie looks down again, visibly hurt.
All you had to do was tell me. Tell you what?
Millie turns to her.
Please don't lie to me.
They stare at one another intensely.
What do you want me to say? I want to know if you love him.
Tight-lipped, Kate holds her head erect.
No.
Millie still stares at her without expression.
Why did you leave? Because I had to talk to him, alone.
Why?
To tell him I didn't love him.
Millie's eyes shift as she considers this. Kate moves closer to the bed.
Millie, I'm going to go back to London tomorrow.
Because of me?
Because of you. Because of Merton. And because of me. I'm in your way.
Don't be ridiculous.
Would you really mind if I left?
Yes, I would.
Kate looks down at her, her eyes swimming with tears.
Please don't lie to me.
She attempts to smile, but cannot.
I don't want you to hate me.
Her brows furrow in a frown. Millie looks at her open-mouthed.
I won't.
Kate looks down at her sadly.
Yes, you will. If I stay, you will.
They stare at one another resignedly. Morning, the Palazzo Leporelli. A footman admits Merton.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno, signore.
Merton crosses a courtyard to where Millie sits breakfasting.
Morning.
He doffs his hat.
Kate's still sleeping.
Smiling, he sits opposite her.
I've just taken Kate to the ferry.
He stares at her.
I didn't know she was leaving.
She decided last night.
Merton nods.
She asked me to tell you how sorry she was. She didn't have a chance to say goodbye.
He nods again, numbly.
I hope you won't be leaving too.
No. I like it here.
They smile at each other. Merton glances away, thinking. Later, they visit a boatyard where workmen are constructing gondolas, several of which rest on supports at the water's edge.
I'll take that back to England.
And you know, the prow is much heavier than the stern.
Really?
Completely off balance and he'd fallen.
Well, I would never have thought of that.
Frighteningly clever, aren't I?
Anyway, that's not the prow, that's the stern.
Millie holds a parasol.
No, that's the prow, that's the stern.
No, that's the prow and that's the stern.
No.
They cross a bridge.
I think they should demolish the whole place.
How can you say that?
It's true, it's a very good idea.
You'd knock down the basilica?
I'd raise the whole of St. Mark.
Oh, you're just arguing for the sake of it.
Not at all. Think of all the wasted space. Thousands of square feet for two cafes and a handful of myopic tourists.
What would you build instead?
Houses for the poor.
Oh, that's completely unfair. That is so unfair.
Why?
Because you're using an emotional argument. How could I possibly disagree?
Well, don't agree with me and admit you've lost.
Never.
You've lost.
Never.
You've completely
lost.
I
have not
you've
lost.
You've totally lost.
Merton touches her cheek with one hand. Smiling, she pushes him away. Another day. Heavy rain clouds hang over the domes of Venice. Rain pours down on empty streets and the canal. In his hotel room, Merton, in shirt sleeves and waistcoat, stands at the leaded window looking out. His face is a mask of thoughtfulness. In London, Kate, in a lighthouse dress and with her long hair gathered loosely behind her, stands at the window of her room, too, looking out into rain. Her arms are crossed, her large dark eyes stare unseeing at the scene before her in deep reflection. In a drawing room at the Palazzo Leporelli, a servant clears away a silver tea service as Millie and Susan stand at the windows, contemplating the rain.
He didn't say he'd visit. He just said we'd meet. There's no reason why I can't go to him.
You can't go out in this rain.
Why not? What could the rain do to me?
Shaking her head in disapproval, Susan moves away. Later, in a light overcoat and carrying an umbrella, Millie walks alone through the deserted, rain-swept streets. Her long reddish hair falls freely over her shoulders. She passes a couple taking shelter under a balcony beside the canal. In his hotel room, Merton stands beside the bed, packing clothes into an open suitcase. He folds a shirt and places it in the case, then turns to pick up another and starts to fold it.
See?
Putting down the shirt, he crosses to the door and opens it. Millie stands leaning on the doorframe, smiling.
I was going to come and see you when the rain stopped.
The rain hasn't stopped for 3 days.
He shifts awkwardly.
Come in.
Pulling the door wide, he steps back and Millie enters.
Susie thinks you've been avoiding us.
Why would I do that?
Millie raises her eyebrows.
That's exactly what I said.
She smiles at him warmly. That night in a restaurant. They sit together across a small table with glasses raised in a toast to one another. A blue flame dances over the spirit in Millie's glass. She blows it out. Then puts down the glass, looking across at Merton.
What have you been doing in your hideaway?
Pacing the room, drawing on the windows.
Packing your bags?
He glances down, half smiling, then back at her.
And unpacking them.
She leans forward on her bare arms.
Why did you stay?
He looks down, thinking. Shaking his head slowly, he glances up at her.
I have nothing to go back to.
Your work?
Oh, I don't believe in any of the things I write about. I fake passion. I fake conviction.
I believe in you.
Why?
I just do. Have a good feeling.
He looks puzzled.
A good feeling?
Yes. I think everything's going to happen for you, Merton. Sooner than you think.
How do you know?
With certain people I know.
Smiling, she raises her glass in a toast to him and drinks, and chokes on the spirit.
Are you all right?
I was trying to impress you. I'm going to make a fool of myself tonight.
She smiles seductively.
Later,
they leave the restaurant together and set off along a shadowy, covered passageway. Clutching Merton's arm, Millie stumbles on a paving stone and falls against his shoulder. They walk on.
You're drunk, aren't you?
Not as drunk as I'm pretending to be.
How are we going to get you home?
We're not. We're going to get you home first.
Millie.
I'm walking you home.
No, you can't.
I can.
In a lighted square, Merton stops and turns to her.
All right, then. You walk me there, and I'll walk you all the way back.
Fine.
Smiling broadly, she clutches his arm and draws him off. In London, Kate sits before her dressing table mirror, staring vacantly downwards, holding a letter in one hand.
I know it must be difficult to write when you're with her all the time, but please try, if only to reassure me.
She gazes into the mirror.
In my head, I follow you around the streets and canals. Sometimes I see you touch her, and I'm suddenly scared.
Doesn't look familiar.
I'm walking you home. That's the agreement.
All right. Are you sure you know the way?
Yes.
Ah, so that must mean that you're taking me the long way around.
How would I do something like that?
They descend a flight of steps.
I dread to think.
And turn down the narrow lane towards Merton's hotel.
Millie, is this really a good idea?
Smiling shyly, arm in arm like young lovers, they reach the hotel door. Merton raps on it and turns to her.
And now we go back.
We have to go all the way inside.
She looks up at him, brushing a strand of hair from her face.
Millie.
I told you I was going to make a fool of myself tonight.
I don't want you to.
A shadow passes over Millie's face. She looks into his eyes, disappointed.
I'll only let you take me home if you promise to come see me tomorrow.
He stares at her, expressionless. After a moment, he smiles.
I promise.
In the next day.
Taking his arm, she draws him away.
And the day after that.
Kate at the mirror.
Even if you don't write back, read this letter again and again. And every time she looks at you, and every time she smiles, don't forget I love you more.
She stares at her image, her eyes brimming with tears. The next evening, from pouring rain, Merton and Millie enter an old stone church, the Scuola di San Rocco. Merton collapses his umbrella and rests it against a wall by the door. They look about. Taking off his hat, Merton follows Millie into the center of the vast, shadowy, empty space. On one side, draped wooden scaffolding covers an ornately decorated wall. Millie stands looking up at it, frowning, obviously upset. With hands on hips, Merton watches her from the side.
Where is everyone? Why isn't anyone working?
Don't be upset.
Of course I'm upset. How can they restore it if no one's working?
Well, you can always come and see it another time. It won't go away.
Millie turns to him, her mouth slightly open, with a wounded expression. Merton blinks and looks down. Millie strides off towards the scaffolding. Merton follows her.
Millie?
Pulling aside the white muslin drapery that hangs over the outside of the scaffolding, he steps within. Millie is not there. He approaches a bare wooden ladder and looks up, holding his hat in one hand.
Millie?
Cautiously, he climbs upwards. Reaching the first level, he moves round to another ladder and climbs again. Glancing up, he catches a glimpse of her dress above him.
Millie!
Level by level, he continues climbing after her. Two flights further up, he pauses again beside the next ladder and looks up, listening.
Millie?
Slowly, he climbs to the penultimate level, and finally, up the last ladder to the top. He stands for a moment, looking around him. At one end of the scaffold, muslin sheets hang like curtains across the platform. He steps forward and opens them. Millie stands looking at a frescoed wall, the mural obviously in the process of being restored. She turns towards him, her lips parted, with the same wounded expression as before. Merton stares back at her, impassive. Slowly she draws close to him. Placing one hand on his shoulder, she leans forward to kiss him, tenderly on the edge of his mouth. Caressing his hair and his cheek, she kisses him again on the mouth, gently, lovingly. Slowly, Merton responds, putting his arms around her, pulling her close against him, returning her kisses. They stand locked in each other's arms. Merton's eyes are moist with tears. He closes his eyes and, holding her close, kisses her again. Day. Merton, in shirt sleeves and waistcoat, stands at his open hotel window, watching the rain and smoking a cigarette, deep in thought. At length, he moves to a writing table and sits, resting the cigarette in an ashtray. On the desk before him, an opened leather letter-writing case beside a lit lamp. Merton slips on his round spectacles and, picking up a pen, leans forward to write.
My dearest Kate, everything I've done for you. Only it gets harder every day. She's alive, Kate. More alive than anyone I've ever known.
In England, Kate arrives by car at Lord Mark's country home. Greeting her, Lord Mark kisses her hand.
My dear Kate, such a pleasure.
They start inside. He follows Kate, whose face is clouded with seriousness.
What could be so urgent?
Venice. In deep fog, Merton's gondola arrives at the Palazzo Leporelli. The doorman steps forward.
No, non deve ritornare.
What is it?
The lady's a little fatigued.
Merton stares up at him.
Nothing's wrong. Nothing's wrong. Perché aspetti qua? Vai!
Merton stands frowning in the gondola as the gondolier rows slowly back into the foggy canal away from the palazzo. Later. Black-suited waiters rush to stack chairs beside empty tables in a piazza. At one side, a long pillared arcade in the shelter of which people sit at tables over coffee, watching the downpour. Merton appears, strolling along the arcade, one hand in a pocket of his long overcoat, the other holding his drenched hat. He passes the open door of a cafe. Inside, Lord Mark sits reading a newspaper. A coffee cup rests on the table beside him. Merton walks by, then stops, frowning. Turning, he retraces his steps. When he reaches the cafe doorway, Lord Mark has gone. A waiter clears away the coffee cup and the newspaper. At the Palazzo Leporelli, the doorman opens the street door to Merton.
I want to talk to Miss Theo.
She wants to see no one.
Tell her it's me.
She said no one. She's very tired.
Standing in the rain, Merton stares up at him.
Has anyone else been to see her?
The doorman looks uncomfortable.
An Englishman.
Miss Thel had a visit this morning.
Merton looks away, then back at him.
Lord Mark.
The doorman does not react.
Tell Miss Thel I came to see her.
He backs away from the door, still watching the doorman.
Tell her.
Merton's Hotel, the old receptionist.
Signor Danger, c'è una donna per lei.
Merton, lying on his bed in his room, jumps up and dashes downstairs, passing the receptionist at her desk.
Grazie.
In the shadowy lobby, a woman in a white dress and broad-brimmed hat stands with her back to him, staring at a coloured glass window. She is of the height and build of Kate. Then she turns. It is Susan, Millie's companion. She smiles sadly. In the small empty hotel dining room, Merton and Susan sit at a small table. The receptionist brings a lighted oil lamp. Merton waves her away.
Basta, così, grazie.
The old woman places the lamp on a table behind them and turns down the wick. Then she leaves. In the half-light of the rainy afternoon, they gaze across the table at one another awkwardly.
Is she sick?
Susan nods slowly.
Yes.
Is she dying?
Did you know?
Will she see me?
Smiling, she nods.
I think so.
His face relaxes with relief. He gets to his feet.
If she asks you, just say no. Tell her it isn't true.
He looks puzzled.
What isn't true?
But Lord Mark told her.
He stares at her apprehensively.
What did he tell her?
That you've been with Kate. All the time.
Merton blinks nervously.
All what time?
From the beginning.
He looks away, remembering.
I saw him in the piazza.
And sits again.
Florian's. Through the window. I hardly know him. Why did he tell her that?
He wanted to marry Millie.
He knew she didn't want him. She told him. He knew that. What did he want? Did he want to hurt her? Did he want to kill her?
He stops and stares down at the table, thinking. Susan watches him closely. Merton cannot look at her. His head twitches nervously.
How did he know about Kate?
Kate must have told him.
That can't be true.
He looks up at her, shaking his head, then freezes, considering that possibility.
Who else knew?
Tight-lipped, Merton stares at her. At the Palazzo Leporelli, Merton and Susan walk past tall windows through shafts of sunlight to the door of the drawing room, where Millie rests on a chaise longue in a sleeveless white diaphanous nightdress. She is pale, and there are dark shadows around her eyes. They stop in the doorway, watching her. Millie turns to them. Merton glances at Susan, then steps across the room towards Millie.
I was hoping you'd find a way to see me.
All you had to do was ask.
I couldn't do that. I had to be a little difficult.
Merton stands beside the chaise longue, looking down at her.
You look well.
Apparently not. You've heard I'm ill?
Yes.
He sits in an armchair at the foot of the chaise longue. Susan, still standing at the doorway, now withdraws.
I went out yesterday morning. I feel better in the mornings. It's such a big city, but I thought I might see you. Wandering around.
I thought the same.
Where did you go?
San Marco. The Rialto. All the places we went together.
Maybe we'd just kept missing each other. Me turning the corner just as you went the other way.
I thought of that, so I stayed in the same place and waited for hours.
And we still didn't see each other.
She looks down wistfully.
When will you go back to London?
I'm not going anywhere.
What we do here?
The same things we did before.
Millie looks across at him, smiling weakly.
Do I look like I can climb a church scaffold?
You can do anything you want.
Not anymore. I can't fool myself forever.
They stare at one another.
It isn't true, Millie.
Her smile fades. She turns away.
What he told you? It isn't true.
Look what Mark brought me from London.
A biscuit tin.
Millie, please, listen.
Look at the print on the box. It's Ophelia drowning. Or someone dying, anyway. He didn't notice until the last moment.
Millie.
He moves to her.
You should have seen him. He was so embarrassed. He kept trying to turn the tin on its side without me noticing.
No, he never does anything quite right. He came here to hurt me and he brought me a box of biscuits.
What he told you? It isn't true.
I told him that myself and then I sent him away in the rain.
But you believed him.
Millie looks down, tight-lipped.
Millie. What can I do to persuade you?
Don't.
She turns to him, eyes wide, deeply earnest.
But beyond that, you and I.
Merton stares at her, then he glances down. Reaching out, Millie touches his hand.
I love you.
Merton looks up at her. She smiles happily through tears.
Both of you.
And shrugs weakly. Merton stares at her for a long moment without moving. Then he looks down. His brows furrow and his eyes flood with tears. In anguish, he looks up at her again.
I'm so sorry.
Millie regards him lovingly. He glances down again, trying to control his emotions, but he cannot. Bending forward, he grasps her hand.
I'm so sorry.
And kisses it, sobbing. Mastering her own tears, Millie strokes his hair. Kneeling beside her, Merton buries his head in her bosom, still clutching her hand. Tenderly, calmly, she comforts him. Morning. Merton sits alone at a cafe table in the Piazza di San Marco over coffee. His straw hat rests on the table beside him. He leans forward on his elbows, his mouth resting against his raised, clasped hands, his face serious. Beyond him, on a white stone bridge which arches over the canal, a woman appears, dressed in black and wearing a broad-brimmed black hat. She stops when she notices Merton. Turning, Merton sees her. The woman continues her slow walk across the bridge toward him. It is Susan. When she reaches the piazza, she stops. Merton rises from the table and moves numbly across the stone paving towards her, his face tense with apprehension. When he reaches her, he stops. They stand together, without moving, staring at one another. Susan appears to say something to him, and Merton's head drops. Day. In bright sunlight, four top-hatted and black-suited gondoliers slowly row an ornate, dark-canopied funeral barge across the broad canal towards the church of San Michele. On the prow of the barge, a life-sized statue of a female angel with outspread wings. The barge passes slowly over the brown water. Finally, it reaches the quayside steps beside the church, where a party of church officials and mourners stand waiting. The top-hatted gondoliers and others lift the draped and flower-strewn coffin from the barge and carry it up the steps towards the church.
My heart is sore pained within me, and the terrors of death are fallen upon me. Fearfulness and trembling are come upon me, and horror hath overwhelmed me.
The coffin is borne past Susan and Merton, who stand at the church door, motionless and numb with grief.
And I said, oh, that I had wings like a dove, for then I would fly away and be at rest.
With deeply sorrowful faces, Merton and Susan follow the coffin, the priest and the officials into the church. The scene fades to black. A wet London street at night. A taxi arrives at the flight of steps before Merton's rooms. Kate alights, wearing an overcoat and hat. Opening an umbrella, she climbs the steps in the rain towards Merton's front door. In his room, Merton, in a heavy woolen sweater, sits leaning on his hand, gazing into a glowing coal fire. He sits without moving, then he shifts his position slightly.
Merton?
Now he puts one hand to his forehead, looking down. He looks up, thinking, motionless. Finally, he rises and moves across the room to open the door. Kate stands outside. They stand looking at one another for a moment, then Merton steps back and allows her to enter.
You couldn't hear me?
I was next door.
Kate removes her coat. Merton helps her and takes the coat.
When did you get back?
He lays the coat over a chair back.
Fortnight night on Friday.
And sits at his desk.
Well, I couldn't rush to you, could I? I was keeping to our wonderful system.
She was my friend too, Merton.
Of course she was. Our great friend. The three of us, so...
Stop it.
Kate looks away. Merton watches her, slowly shaking his head.
Why did you tell Lord Mark?
Kate looks back at him.
Tell him what?
About us. You knew he'd go to her.
Tight-lipped, she does not move.
What about all your plans?
I was scared of losing you.
Merton glares at her. She looks back at him evenly. She still wears her dark, wide-brimmed hat. Its thin veil covers her face. Slowly she moves towards him. When she reaches him, she extends a hand and caresses his cheek with the back of it, then his chest. Reaching up, Merton takes her hand in his and kisses it. With his other hand, he produces a letter from his desktop.
This is for you. Open it.
It's addressed to you.
It's from Millie. Aren't you interested to know what it says?
I know what it says. She's made you rich.
Take it. It's your prize.
Kate stands holding the letter, looking down at it. Merton smiles bitterly. Still holding the letter, Kate crosses the room to the open fire grate and, glancing down at the address once more, drops it unopened onto the burning coals. Then she turns and walks past Merton and out of sight. Merton sits with his hands clasped before him, staring grim-faced at the fire, watching the letter being consumed by the flames. In the bedroom, Kate has removed her hat and her dress, and now, sitting on the bed, is pulling off her long stockings. Rising from the desk, Merton crosses heavily to the bedroom door and stands watching as she finishes undressing. She removes her corset and lays it on the floor beside the bed. Now she is naked. Sitting on the edge of the bed in the pale blue light from a window, she turns to look at him.
Why did you give me the letter?
He stands looking back at her, expressionless.
I wanted to see what you'd do.
After a moment, she half smiles.
You'll still get her money. Burning a letter doesn't change that.
He hesitates, then shakes his head.
No.
They stare at one another. Then she pulls herself back onto the bed and turns away, lying curled up on her side, her hands under her head. Slowly, Merton moves to the bed and sits beside her. Reaching out a hand, he caresses her bare shoulder.
I'm going to write to her lawyers.
She turns her head to look up at him.
You want me to persuade you to keep her money? Is that what you want?
I'll never take her money.
They look long into one another's eyes. Then Kate pulls herself up to a sitting position. Putting her arms around Merton, she pulls him close, resting her head against his shoulder, rocking him. She kisses his neck. Merton caresses her bare back with the flat of his hand, kissing her shoulder. Kate pulls off his sweater. Pulling aside his braces, she then removes his long-sleeved undershirt. When his torso is bare, she pushes him onto his back on the bed and undoes his trousers. Merton watches her. When he is naked, she lies down upon him, laying her head on his chest, sliding her legs between his.
I love you too.
They hold one another in the pale light, their eyes haunted and sorrowful.
What are you thinking about?
Merton stares at the ceiling without blinking, his lips tightly shut. His eyes fill with tears. Kate seems to sense this without seeing.
You're still in love with her.
I was never in love with her.
While she was alive. No.
Tears flow down Merton's cheeks and his face twitches.
I'm sorry, Kate. I'm so sorry.
Tenderly, she kisses his chest. Lifting herself, she gathers his head in her arms, kissing his cheek and his neck. Merton turns and they kiss passionately. Rising, Kate settles herself down onto him. Merton sits up to hold her close, kissing her shoulders, her breasts. Kate stares toward the pale light from the window, her arms locked around his neck.
She wanted us to be together. We will be.
They make love. Merton lies back on the bed. Kate sits astride him, riding him with a kind of quiet desperation. Her eyes, wet with tears, stare still at the window. At length, Kate stops moving. Her brow wrinkles and her lip trembles. Turning her face to hide her tears from him, she lies down again on his chest, her head on one side, her eyes wide and staring.
I'm going to write that letter.
Blinking back tears, she raises her eyebrows.
Do whatever you want.
He stares forward intently.
I want to marry you, Kate. Without her money.
Kate's mouth closes and her face hardens.
Is that your condition?
Yes.
Am I allowed one too?
Of course you are.
She lies still, clutching his hand to her breast.
Give me your word of honor. Your word of honor that you're not in love with her memory.
Kate stares forward, waiting. Finally, she closes her eyes. She rises from the bed, leaving Merton lying there, staring at nothing, expressionless, lost in thoughts of the past. Millie's smiling face from their early days together, lounging back against the cushions on their night trip in the two gondolas in the narrow canal, with the lamplight flickering romantically over the stone walls of the houses at the side. Millie and Kate reaching out to catch one another's hands as the gondolas drew abreast. Motionless and grief-stricken, Merton closes his eyes. The scene fades to black. Venice. In opal-colored iridescent light, Merton steps from a boat and stands at a quayside beside two suitcases. Taking coins from a pocket, he pays the two young boatmen.
I believe in you. I just do. Have a good feeling.
The boatmen point off down the quay. Merton picks up his cases.
I think everything's going to happen for you, Merton. Sooner than you think.
Turning, he sets off along the canal.
With certain people I know.
Walking slowly away, he disappears around a corner.
The audio description was written by William Roberts. It was read by Peter Wickham